Hey everybody, welcome to the weekly podcast once again. I'm your host, Jonathan Doyle. Thank you so much for the privilege of your company, your time. Time is the commodity these days. Time is the commodity, and for you to share it with us is really appreciated. So I hope you're going to get a lot out of today's episode. We've been really having some great content the last few weeks. I hope you've heard the Luke Richmond interview that we did a few weeks ago, which was really fantastic. Today is no exception. Today you're going to hear from a really good friend of mine, Matty Rogers. Matty Rogers is a specialist in health and well-being, physical movement. You know, we talk about diet and exercise. This is a guy that has got a great backstory. If you've ever felt stuck in your health and fitness goals, then there's going to be something in here for you. He's had a big impact on my life. He's helped me overcome a significant injury and really get my myself back on track. So there's really some great stuff in here for you. Do me a favor, housekeeping, please subscribe to the podcast wherever you're hearing this, Android, Apple Podcasts, wherever you are, please make sure you subscribe so we can keep bringing you great content. And make sure you check out all the social feeds. All my social feeds will be here. We're going to link you up to Matt's social feeds as well. The other thing I ask is just grab the link and share it with people. There's some real gold here, and I hope that you're going to share this with others who will benefit from it. So that's it from me right now. Relax, enjoy this great interview with my good friend, Matty Rogers.
I'm actually Matty.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that what you prefer?
It's stuck, yeah.
You do?
That's all I answer to really these days. I don't know how it's stuck. Matty, Matt, Matthew was when I'm in trouble.
Okay. Well, let's begin. Matty Rogers, welcome to the weekly podcast with me, your host, Jonathan Doyle. Thank you for making time for us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
We were just discussing off air. How do you describe yourself? So let's set this up. You're in a bar somewhere. Somebody walks across to you and says, you look interesting. What do you do? What do you say to people?
It's a tough question, actually. Yeah. I always think of this, and I think personal trainer, I suppose, is what I am.
Yep.
I am an exercise physiologist by trade from uni, but I would never use those two terms to describe myself. Like if someone asked what it is that I do, I would say that I'm in the role of human development.
And why? Take us to the backstory. How did you get into this particular path? Of all the things you could have done, how did you end up choosing exercise physiology? What was the interest? Take us the backstory.
Well, like every good story, I suppose, I'll take you back to when I was a child. So I was never the fit kid. I grew up around really fit parents. Like my parents have always been influenced me in terms of health and fitness. But I think maybe held back a little bit because of their influence. And so as a result.
So in what way? Like they were like mega fit out there all the time. They never read your story. Like what are we talking about? Were they elite
mega fit? Or? Dad, definitely. Dad was the kind of guy that you would come home with mates as like a 12-year-old after riding around on your push bikes. And he would be shirtless doing chin-ups in an L-sit position in the gym. And all your mates would be looking around like, who was that? Oh, that's
so,
my dad.
So what was that about? Where did he, was he always that way? Or what?
No, I think he just sort of fell into it as he got older. He's a bit of a farm kid. So he's always been active. He's understood sort of the basic background, organic food and healthy sort of eating. Same as mum. Mum's a yoga teacher as well, once she dropped out of the APS. So I think for me, I became a little bit stagnant in my eating patterns, a little bit stagnant in training, and I held back. And as a result, I became the fat kid,
really?
To put it bluntly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I definitely was.
I never would have picked that.
No, a lot of people don't when I tell that story. So the big catalyst for me was when I was 13 years old, so in year seven, we in P, we're all lining up at school. And so we all got weighed in. And I weighed
they
in at
weighed
a whopping.
You.
Weighed in, just
they,
to see. Yeah, a bit of fitness testing. Teacher thought he'd weigh us all.
That
so,
is like that you would not get away with that these days.
No, not at all.
Dear Lord. Okay, so you're being weighed.
Weighed at school. And I weighed in at a whopping, at 13 years old, 74 kilos.
Dear Lord.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, luckily you're 6'7". So
exactly. Yeah, I'm huge. Everyone knows that I'm a giant. Yeah.
So what was that like? Was that, how old were 13?
13,
that's
yeah.
That's not a good time. So can you remember that specific moment? How you
100%.
Felt,
I genuinely think it emotionally scarred me to some degree.
Wow.
Whereas I became on this journey of sort of under-eating, chopping and changing for a few years. I know you're young, you're going through that developmental stage to the point when at 15 years old, I begged my parents to buy me a bench press. I was like, I want a bench press.
Wow.
I saw this bench press at Sportsman's Warehouse and I thought, I need a bench. So from there, just grew this understanding that I needed to take things into my own hand. I wasn't going to get anyone else to save me. No one was going to come and help me. My parents, I didn't really connect with the type of things that they were teaching me. I knew there was something more I needed to learn. So I also bought a book on strength programming and training. And I just learned everything about this book.
So
read it.
Let me pin you right there. You have this experience. You're 13 years of age. You're already carrying a fair bit of weight. I mean, was your diet terrible? Were you the kind of kid that was overeating back then at that age?
I think I was just spoiled. My parents have always been quite giving, and I think that they just never really knew what to do or say. They'd always just give me what I wanted, I suppose.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you have this experience. Other people would choose other responses. So some people would go into deep depression, stay in the room the whole time. Other people would keep eating.
Yeah.
Other people would go into other coping behaviors. So one of my theses is that when life's difficult, many people will choose some kind of coping behavior.
Definitely.
You talk about you decide to do something about it. You want to get a bench press. You start reading stuff. Why did you choose that? What was the switch? What was the moment where you went, I'm going to push back, I'm going to get even? What was it? Was it competition? Was it what was it that made you choose to respond the way you did?
It was a mixture of competition and anger, I think. Anger at myself for letting it sort of get this way. I think there's also, as a young kid, you bullied a lot. And I think you held a little bit astray by your peers for being different, for being overweight. It's seen as unhealthy and it's seen as your problem. So I thought, and I took it on as it was my problem and that I needed to fix it.
The bullying stuff, I mean, just we'll digress for a second, but, you know, there's a school of thought that's like, you know, it happens to everybody, it toughens people up. Personally, I don't see the upside. I mean, I think many of us and many people listening have been through that. Looking back on that experience of bullying, was there any upside really? I mean, or was it just that your response? I mean, what's your take on that whole experience of bullying that many people have had?
Well, I think I'm probably the rarity in that I took a positive experience from something. Like I used to resent PE. I was even thinking of this yesterday, thinking about the podcast and everything. There were so many times I came up with excuses to get out of PE because I knew I wasn't as fit as the rest of the class.
Yeah.
And I knew that I didn't want to be singled out by the PE teacher, by my peers. And so I decided to do my own training and get fit, which was CrossFit, which was really began that whole process. And it was actually a PE teacher that took me under their wing to help me out. And then that's what began that positive experience with growth and development.
And this is what we were talking about last week. So shout out to Michael, Mick Bolters.
Yes.
Is that who it is?
Mick Bolters, exactly. He is the famous guy that got me into it.
I've never met him, but I have actually heard many good things about him. So is this a case of when you're ready in life, when you're seeking something, that sometimes you're just attuned to the right people crossing your path?
100%. Yeah. That's happened to me in all walks of life every time. Yeah, definitely.
It's interesting listening to this drivenness maybe, but how you push back and you respond to this circumstance. Like we were talking before we started, I got up at 4 o'clock today, did a ridiculous bike ride, then went to your gym and destroyed myself again. And my wife's like, what are you doing? Look at you. And I'm like, you know, my grandfather died at 44.
Yep.
Massive coronary in front of his 5 kids. My father had his first heart bypass at 50. Now, both of these guys were stressed, smokers, all that stuff, overweight, so I haven't done that. But there's something, isn't there? There's like you kind of go one of two ways. You either go, I'm going to drive back hard against this. I guess what we're talking about is adversity, right? It's like how you deal with it, how you respond to difficult circumstances. What's your thesis on that? What's your DNA on difficult stuff and how to respond to it?
I think it's there to test us. There's always good that comes out of difficulty. If you're not willing to go through the difficulty and the struggle, you just can't enjoy the rewards. That sounds so cliche, but I think that's a genuine truth of it all.
Well, let's move forward. So you start to reclaim this fitness.
Yeah.
Do you remember how you felt when it started to flow for you? Did you have a sense of accomplishment? Were you happier? What was the feedback like as you changed?
It took me a while to believe it. The first few people that experienced were probably peers I wasn't directly friends with, but were in my year group. Started noticing in year 11 and 12, like you were the fat kid. Now you're the skinny fit kid.
Wow.
Like what's going on? What's changing? And it was weird for me to first take this positive feedback from them and think that this thing that I'm doing daily, ritually, like it was morning and night, my food was changing, everything was changing. I was reading books. I was talking to Mr. Bolters all the time about what to do.
Yeah.
And to get this sort of feedback from my peers, it was like, what's going on? Are they being serious? Are they being facetious? What's going on? Until I think the big catalyst when I knew, all right, I'm onto something here.
Uh-huh.
And unfortunately, I had to say it at 16, was girls. When girls started noticing this guy's actually lost weight, he's changing a little bit, was when I thought, okay.
This is working. Guys, it's interesting when your peers start talking about it because teenage boys are really the most gracious and encouraging of peer groups. Look, there's many people listening to this who'll be struggling with weight, health and fitness. What you're talking about is the ability to create change. And
yes.
Honestly, a lot of people find change really hard. They get they get a start.
Yeah.
How did you keep momentum? You talk about changing diet. You talk about, you know, and I've messed around with different forms of eating and stuff, but I tend to gravitate back towards a baseline. How did you maintain change? We can understand your catalyst, right? So we understand why you wanted to shift things, but how did you maintain the change and the momentum?
I continually implement small things into my life. Like, I think small bites are the way to take it, for lack of a better term, small bites of it. You can digest it better. I think when you try to change too many things at once, it's never going to last. So I think for me, even as a young age, I was obviously, there was this innate passion and curiosity around the body. Like, I needed to learn as much as I could, but I knew that I couldn't learn everything at once. And so I sort of let it happen organically, I think.
And then you finish school.
Yeah.
You decide to continue with this process through study.
Yeah.
You do the exercise physiology.
Mm-hmm.
And take us on the journey through where you've got to now. So you finish the study. What happens next?
So I finished my studying. I actually started at UC in Canberra, and it didn't really work out for me. I found it too big of a university. So I decided to go back home to where my parents are in Albury, CSU, to finish off some studies there. I sort of see this, though, as my apprenticeship. Something that my father sort of settled into me from an early age was that this whole process of you becoming a trainer, a coach, and whatever you want to do with this, he goes, I know you will always do something with the body, is that understanding this is your apprenticeship. And your apprenticeship might be 5 years, it might be 10, but it's not going to be any less than that. So sit in for the big haul, learn as much as you can, and get this apprenticeship under your belt.
What was the hardest point?
The hardest point for me is probably seeing, again, now peers in the industry doing things that I think that I should be doing, I suppose.
Give us an example. So this is, you know, this is probably not, this is hard to talk about, but what are you seeing that, is you saying you're seeing people doing stuff you want to be doing?
I think what I probably used to perceive that I should be doing because of the experience I have, because of the qualifications I have, there's people that haven't been as qualified as me that open their own gym. Yeah. I think everyone thinks in the industry as a PT, as an exercise physiologist, as a physio, whatever it is you have, your role is to one day own your own business.
Yeah.
And I think that's sort of seen as that is the grand master, that is the plan. You get that, you're an apex predator, boom, you're on a roll from there.
And what's your critique of that? Do you want that? Or
I used to want that because I think that's what you're supposed to do.
And what changed?
Nothing's changed, but I think that I can help people more by continuing on my apprenticeship and learning more and waiting till the right time presents itself.
100%. All right. So I want to ask you about patience. Remind me about that in a sec. But listening to you, there's a favorite quote I have from, I'm not sure what the listener's favorite 14th century philosopher is, but mine happens to be John Duns Scotus. And he famously said that every human comparison is essentially diabolical. What he meant was, he was a Catholic philosopher, and he said that basically every way in which we compare ourselves to someone else, it's satanic. Now, we didn't have to go that far where everybody's in a different place with that stuff, but his point was, however you perceive spirituality, God, the universe, we're all created specifically and individually, and the goal is to be fully authentic in who you are. And the more that we look around and go, if I was just like that person, if I just had that business, if I just, you know, and then that gets reinforced nowadays through social media and stuff too.
Yeah, definitely.
So we all want to be. How did you let go of this desire to be an apex predator immediately and get your gym? And like, how do you have the patience you have now to do what you're doing, just to keep the learning process happening?
Good question. The patience, I suppose, at times is just reasserting myself that the right time will come and trusting my gut instinct. I know that sounds very cliche. A lot of people sort of say, trust your intuition. And I really think it's important to sit back sometimes, let life sort of just evolve organically and have a look at just how it unfolds. Really think about it and conscious of it. I think every action I do, I always consciously think about what I'm doing and what will result in the course that I take. And so if you think about it and you sort of actively critique yourself in a way, positive and negative, the right path always seems to lay itself out before you. And just at the moment, that path about what I felt the peers were pressuring me to do in my industry didn't lay out for me at that time.
Yeah. It's fascinating because there's such a strong sense in our culture of to build, to create, to drive, to do.
Yeah.
You must be on to the next thing.
Yeah.
But the kind of, you know, having trained with you and see how you operate, you're big on knowing stuff, like your knowledge base. You want to know your craft, right?
Yeah.
Is that the phase you're in? You want to hone
100%.
Craft? Why?
Yeah. There's a famous quote, I think it's E.T., the hip-hop preacher, that says it. And he's like, you only hone in on becoming a master by hours and hours and hours of beating on your craft. And it is so true. Like these PTs out there that have worked in gyms for 1 year, 2 years, doing 30 hours a week and go, I'm going to open my gym. Like I've worked for a decade in the industry, working 60-hour-plus weeks, and I still don't think I'm ready. Like until I have that 10,000 hours or more, until I'm a master. Like I want anyone to be able to walk in and help them. Like I want them to leave helping. It's not like an egotistic thing. It's a matter of being so sure in your art that someone comes to those doors. I go, I know what I can do to help you.
Yeah.
I've seen this before. Rather than I'll just play around with this, play around with that, try this out.
Why
you
do
didn't
you,
get anywhere.
Why do you want that? Like this is relatively unusual. I mean, it's much easier to go for the short win and to jump on, you know, open a new Instagram account, open a gym, make a lot of noise and churn customers through. Why do you want to master the craft?
I genuinely think that I deserve better than that. And people that seek me out deserve better than that. Deserve better than someone that hasn't put in the hours, someone who's faking it.
Why not just fake it and churn people through?
Well, that's not going to help anyone. That's not going to change the world. And I think the course that we're sort of going towards, which I suppose my passion grows from, is we've removed ourselves so much from being human beings, being functional, I think is a big term a lot of people use, that we've lost that practicality to life and fitness. And so we've had to create these gyms. It's quite sad when you think about it. We've created gyms where we have to go to like little mice in wheels in a cage to keep fit and healthy because everything is so sedentary. Everything is done for us. We can have our groceries delivered to the door. You can have your petrol pumped in your car. You can have a car drive you home. Yeah. You don't have to walk anymore. Everything's on iPads and iPhones.
All right, so let's get to the heart of this because when we talked last week in setting this up, your real passion, I mean, I'm going to try and paraphrase it, but you can speak to it, is you're interested in people moving. You're interested in people using their bodies functionally and effectively. Why? What, is that the essence of what you find most interesting in the craft for you?
Definitely, definitely. I think the big thing for me is being able to see change in people that come in unable to do certain daily tasks. And I like the word practicality that you use at the start. Functionality is overused, I think, because everyone's functional tasks are different. So what a 60-year-old lady who's retired does to what a 25-year-old man who's a laborer does is different. So we need to learn how to utilize our bodies. And I think that's what training should be. If we're not going to be all bodybuilders, if we're not going to be the world best CrossFitters, if we're not going to go and climb Everest, then what is it that we need our body to be able to do for the next 80 years?
That sounds, listening to you, you don't hear that a lot. Like I was thinking when we were going to record this, I came through, you know, playing football at school and it was like you use health and fitness and gyms and weights to get big. You just, that's what it's for. You get big. And then you move through school and it's like, well, you still just got to get big. You just want to get ripped and have a massive shop front. So can you, where do you think our ideas about this have come from? Why do so many people think that there's this kind of one atypical way to build the human body? I mean, when you talk about helping people build bodies that are functional for their needs, that's relatively rare. You don't hear that a lot. I don't hear that a lot.
Yeah.
How has this evolved culturally, do you think? Like, what's shaped our beliefs about what gyms and health and fitness and all that stuff's about? What are some of the driving forces?
Well, I think originally it was a vanity thing. When gyms first became sort of a popular culture 50 years ago, let's say, when the Golds of the world started opening up, I think a lot of people did it because they aspired to be like their biggest bodybuilder. They aspired to look like a superhero or something sort of grotesque and giant. The muscular sort of form was seen as the apex for the man, and for a woman, it was paper thin. And I think we've done that long enough that people are now understanding that, well, there's still a lot of disease. We're riddled with disease. There's all sorts of injury and illnesses going on. Something's wrong here. Something's wrong. What has happened that isn't right in our development and our progress, if you want to call it progress? I like to think of it lack of progress with human beings that isn't helping us to get to the next stage to evolve, to become better.
And what are you seeing? Like what, when you look at, you know, you talk about, you know, you get driven home in cars, you don't have to walk as much. What else are you noticing about how we're living? What are people doing?
Office workers, being in Canberra, so many office workers with bound up hips, kyphosis of the back, poke neck, sore neck, stressed out of their eyeballs, not sleeping well, all the above.
Never heard of such things.
No, why we sit here in the chairs.
Well, this is big because I've noticed since I've been working with you, just stretching out the hip flexors all the time.
Yeah.
I'm like, it becomes slightly addictive.
Yeah.
And we were training last week and you said, you know, we had there was me in the mobility class and maybe four ladies, average age 60 plus.
Yes, definitely.
And you made the joke about, you know, guys get to their 40s and kind of some of us get quite excited by mobility work because it's been a whole thing we've missed.
Yeah.
So for people listening, what do you think are some of the component parts of general health and well-being? What are some of the things people need to be thinking about? Because most listeners will be like, well, I should run or I should go to the gym. What are the components, the bigger picture you think people should be thinking about?
the bigger picture people should be looking at is, I suppose, is nutrition, sleep, mobility, and strength. The four things people should look at. And simple. Doesn't need to be overworked.
So take us through some of those. Let's talk about the sleep thing. I'm an evangelist for it, not necessarily the best practitioner.
Yeah.
What is stopping people from sleeping properly? What do they need to do?
Laziness. People need to be a little bit more disciplined, I think.
Yeah.
So everyone sort of blames screen time. They want to blame lights. They want to blame working hours. But at the end of the day, everyone's responsible for their own actions with sleep. Turn your iPads or your electronics off at 8 p.m.
Yeah.
Make sure you go to a dimly lit room to read before you go to bed. Do a little bit of mobility, a bit of down regulation before you go to bed, and wind yourself down, just like you would a child when they go to sleep. I think a lot of us forget how to be a little bit what we did with children in the early days in their development. We stop doing it. We get to this age, it's like, well, you're done, off the production line and into the world, and stop doing that. And then we break down. People just stop doing it. And they wonder, what's happened to my body? I was fit 20-year-old and next minute I'm really unfit. It's like, well, 20 years has passed. And you didn't do a single thing to help that state. And that's the biggest issue.
I have this black hole listening to you. I'm like, I have three kids under 10. I love reading to them at night. And so listening to you talk about some of these cues for sleeping, like I'm pretty tired when I get home and we have dinner, and I may or may not, I can't confirm or deny whether I have a glass of wine, a moderately poured glass of wine. Trainers in the room. And so I read to them for ages, and then we put the light out and I'll usually just talk with them, and, you know, we usually sing a little bit, have a couple of songs. They're still very young. And then I'm destroyed.
Exactly.
I'm lying there and it's like my body's gone, oh, these are all the cues. But I know that it's like, oh, yeah, I got to take rubbish out. I've got to do this for tomorrow, and I got to iron this stuff. And I'm like, man, it's like I just crawl down the hallway. So I hear you on those cues. So we talked about sleep.
Yeah,
we talked about, what are some of the others? What was it, mobility?
Nutrition. Yeah, definitely. People need to have a look at it. I think it's overcomplicated, and there's so much information bombarded at us. Everyone knows the paleo, the Atkins, the keto diets of the world. I think it's about gathering as much information as you can and eating whole foods. Simple as that. Just don't eat anything in a packet anymore.
Help those of us who are completely uneducated. How do you define whole foods? Just something that's not in a packet?
Something that's not in a packet. Something that's as naturally... Don't need all these sauces. It doesn't need to be fancy. I think we've become a little bit overworked and a little bit lucky in the form of the amount of cafes and restaurants open that are offering all these different types of foods.
Would if you took M&Ms out of the packet, would that make them a whole food?
Yeah, whole food, definitely. M&Ms are a soul food, like pizza. Pizza is a soul food, and you need those.
It's funny because I know that when cortisol jacks up and stuff and you get tired, I don't eat a lot of sugar, but lately I've just had this M&M thing happening. Yeah. So, but it's interesting, when we talk about the sugar stuff, my understanding is that biologically we evolved to crave sugar because it was relatively rare in the environment. So you would find it occasionally in honey and certain things, but there wouldn't be a huge access to sugar. So we evolved to kind of crave it a little bit more. And now it's kind of ubiquitous in the environment. So we've got the desire for it that's very strong, but we've now got sudden availability, right?
Definitely. Yeah. I think it was designed sort of because of the stresses in our life. When we were really fatigued, when we were really lacking energy source and food, those last resort hormones would kick in, and then a survival instinct to hunt that down.
Yeah.
But I mean, now it happens so often and it's so readily available to go get your Cadbury chocolate or your crunchy M&Ms and hoof the packet down.
So
it's not ideal. Doing that daily is not a good thing.
He's been spying on me.
Exactly.
I'm usually very good, but it's just the last few days. I've been a little bit weary. So let's talk about people listening. So people listening, I mean, with the nutrition stuff, I've also read that the environment, I read a book on it years ago, really conditions it. So if stuff is in your environment, in your pantry, in your fridge, it's just too much of a temptation. So how can people structure their environment just to make it a little bit more likely they'll do the right thing?
Well, like you said, we're creatures of habit. So I think becoming a little bit more habitual in your thinking. If you reach for the glass of wine every night before you go to bed to wind down, just try two nights of the week not reaching for it. Next week, three nights a week. Weeks after, four, five. And changing the habits. It's as simple as that. Habits don't form overnight. And so unwinding that doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah.
So I think that's the best way. Having cues around the house to just stop yourself from going for those habitual things, rewinding the clock.
He's looking at me thinking, he's going to edit that part out. I'm like, no, I'll leave it in. So we've got the nutrition stuff. We've got some focus on sleep. And I'll put this in the show notes. There was a podcast recently with Joe Rogan and a guy who's like the world guru on sleep. I don't know if I sent that to you, but it's just freakishly good.
Yes, you did. Yeah. Joe Rogan's a great podcaster. Yeah.
But I would just listen to that and I just went, wow. I loved how that interview started. Like, Joe Rogan's like, so how'd you sleep last night? I was like, oh, I didn't really. I was traveling. So we got sleep. We got nutrition. What else we got for people?
Mobility.
You're huge on that.
Huge.
I did not know that word really until I met you. Now,
yeah.
If people could come into my lounge each night, they would see this small red ball and my face contorted in pain. So let's talk about mobility.
So my passion for mobility isn't as, I suppose, long-winded as people would think. It's only been apparent in the last couple of years or few years.
Yeah.
A hero of mine, Dr. Kelly Starrett, who is not an unknown name in the mobility and strength and conditioning world and industry world.
Also known as?
Kelly Starrett, yeah. KS, the supple leopard.
The supple leopard.
The greatest of all. Exactly. So there's a big shout out to him, I suppose.
He's such a big unit too, because when I first-
He is.
Like I kind of thought, oh, this guy must be like, look like a really petite ballet dancer, like yogi kind of guy.
Yeah. No, he's a big guy.
He's a big guy. Yeah.
He's a fit man. He loves to out-angle everyone in photos though. So he's not always as big as he looks. He's really good. He's had
What's
to
out-angling?
Fine-tune the out-angle. Just... In the photo, I got a nice little sort of one-on-one lesson with him last year in San Francisco where he- showed me in a photo. We took one where he out-angled me and then he showed me where to stand and I out-angled him. It's a good thing to do.
Really?
I'll teach you the out-angle before we do it.
Yeah. People, check the show notes.
You need it.
We need out-angling.
Out-angling for the Instagram.
So this is more than photo bombing.
More than photo bombing. This is out-angling everyone. Everyone you have a photo with. You always look like the biggest man in the room.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Stay tuned. When you say the word mobility, what does that mean for you, that word?
So mobility is probably a range of things. People think flexibility, but it's not just a flexibility. It's probably expression of your range of movement under load, I would say.
Okay.
I would suggest. So people think of a squat, if we use that as a basic example.
Yep.
Anyone who's had a PT or has done gym training thinks that you need to be able to squat with the crease of your hip below your knee or parallel to your knee for a good mobility.
Yep.
There should be a nice sort of dorsiflexion range where that top of your shin is at the bottom of your foot, sort of reaching forward. And what it is really is that we're trying to express ourselves and increase that range to be able to unwind the tension that our body has caused by lack of exercise, lack of movement. So seated, for those office workers that I was talking about before, if you're in that seated position for hours and hours at a time, your hips are always locked up.
Yeah.
And you get on the bike, your hips are always locked up. Why is it when you think you stand up, you get a sore lower back? If you look anatomically at where our hips attach up onto our spine and pull our lumbar spine forward, we're not designed to sit in that position all the time. We're not designed to have that sort of physical mold.
All right, so everyone can relate to this, and I can't confirm or deny that I spend a large part of the day in the same position, but what do we do? Like, I mean, is it as simple as saying we've got to get up every block of time and just stretch out the hip flexors? Like, what, how?
Definitely.
So what I want to talk to you about is the interplay between this important stuff that you're talking about and the reality of people's lives. There's someone listening to this right now who's going, okay, this is interesting, but yeah, I'm in an office for 9 hours or 8 hours.
Yeah.
What do they do?
So we obviously know the implementation of stand-up desks. I don't know if you have one in the room here.
Yes, over here.
Over there. Perfect. See, stand-up desk is a great way. So I don't think it's just necessarily about standing up or being seated. It's just about being sedentary.
Okay.
So you need to do some
Define
form of
that.
Movement.
Define sedentary for
Sedentary
us.
Is staying, I would suggest, in a static position for more than an hour, I think. Definitely.
And there's a lot of risk to that, isn't there? We're getting more research on that.
Like
if you want to die early, do that a
Stay
lot.
Stay seated. Yeah. Do that a lot. Yeah. Whatever you do most is how your body will form and function.
That's interesting. So stand-up desks, what else?
There's a range of equipment available now for people in offices.
Yeah.
So fidget sticks is sort of like a cradle you put under the desk you can roll your foot on to keep your hips and your knees and your ankles mobile and keep blood flow to them.
Really?
Yeah, definitely. You're thinking
that.
About a fidget stick? Look at him, he's thinking.
I'm sitting there going, I've never heard of that.
I need a fidget stick.
Okay, so you got that.
Yeah.
What else can people do?
People need to walk. People need to get moving.
Yeah.
Go to the gym and not just necessarily do your weights and do things that are bind you up.
Yeah.
Do your flow sort of movements, like I suppose more energetic yoga in a way. Something between yoga and Pilates, something between bodyweight strength exercises, and express your range of movement. Push yourself through a range that is the opposite of what you mostly do. Keep it that simple for people that are wondering, what do I need to do? Put yourself in a position that's opposite to what you mostly do.
You know, shameless shout out, since I've been training with you, I've noticed a few things. One is that I walk differently. I tend to walk. I just notice I walk around with a, you know, we talk about this core stuff because I've been the typical guy who was like, build a bigger upper body. I was a cyclist. I like, you don't need to do legs because you're a cyclist. You know, then I had this shocking back injury a year ago, but now I find I walk differently. And then on the weekends, Karen's taken up gardening.
Perfect.
But she's more of a project manager than a gardener.
Okay.
So she needs labor.
Oh.
So I've been helping a lot on the weekends. And I notice actually that how I move and the confidence that I feel in a diverse range of movement.
On the tools?
Yeah. Like I just have to say, honestly, I've noticed there's a confidence you get through what we've done.
Yeah.
That I just feel. And also cycling at I cycle at a pretty high level. I've definitely got a sort of strength, and I think I'm doing stuff that the other guys are pretty much not doing. So I'm an evangelist for what you're about. Let's get back to the four you mentioned. We've got mobility, we've got rest, sleep, we've got nutrition. Did you mention another one?
Strength.
Strength.
Yeah.
Why does it matter? I mean, it's obvious, but tell us why it really matters.
Because it sort of helps us express ourselves to, I think, what we are designed to be human beings as we are. So we obviously learnt by creating tools through evolution or through whatever you want to believe in development. And I think we were designed, if you can see, of our muscular system, it holds everything in place. It's our largest organ, and it matters for our entire development. So if you express yourself through strength, if you get a little bit stronger, you find yourself being a little bit more confident, your hormones balance out a little bit better, you just start to crave the better foods, you need more sleep for rest to recover. Yeah. So it sort of encapsulates all of the other pillars that we're sort of talking about to hold it all up.
So what I want to ask you now is, people listening to us, there's going to be a range of people, obviously some people really quite fit. What about all the people who are really struggling? They may be a little bit like you were at 13. What do you think can help people? I often talk about it's like a snowball at the top of a mountain. You know, you just got to get that thing rolling and you get momentum. For someone listening who really isn't happy with where they're at, weight, you know, all the other factors, how do they start a shift? What's the best things that you can offer that you've seen work that can help people move from a sedentary, unhealthy lifestyle into something else? What can they do?
It starts with consciousness, I think. Firstly, you've got to consciously decide what it is you want to do. And it needs to be really simple, like one line in your head that you just tell yourself. It's a mantra daily. I'm going to move. I'm going to move. And keep it simple. You talk about the snowball effect. I talk about the foundations. Yeah. Before you build any building, what do you start doing? You start digging a hole to lay the concrete. And that's what you're really doing, is you're starting to get the foundations going. You get that one thing you do. It might be a walk twice a week. That's it. Let's do that for a month.
Yeah.
And let's build on it. And let's build on it. There's a famous nutritionist who owns RP, Renaissance Periodization, Nick Shaw, who is really renowned for, he's quite expensive as a nutritionist. And he starts with the most basic of implementations for his clientele. So there might be clients coming to them ready for a bodybuilding show who've sort of done a poor reverse diet, put on a heap of weight of their off season. They look really bad. They feel really bad. They're not sure what's going on in their life. They inquire about his coaching and he says, I want you to drink a glass of water every morning as soon as you get up. Talk to me in a week.
Wow.
And it starts like that. It's as simple as that. I think we overuse it. We overcomplicate it. The world is so complicated as it is. Yeah. And people aren't willing to overcomplicate their health and fitness. So let's start with the simple things. And let's build on that. It is genuinely a journey and is genuinely a process of putting in the hours for years. This is not something that's going to happen overnight. And in 12 months when you get your goal, we're not going to walk away.
Yeah.
We're going to do this for 30 years. We're going to do this for 40 years, 50 years, 60 years until you complete life.
We talked about something last week where I said to you that listening to a lot of thinkers around the world and reading a lot of podcasts, there's a bit of an obsession from some of the best people around about this longevity question, right? Which is people beginning to think that the purpose of life is to live as long as possible. And I sort of critiqued that a bit and I thought, well, the goal of life isn't necessarily to live as long as possible. It's to, well, let's talk about that from a movement and health perspective. For you, is it a case of how can people enjoy their time in their body as effectively as possible for as long as possible? What are some of the things that you want to see happening for people as they age?
Treat it as development. Yeah. I think have a look at sort of the different sort of place you are and stage you are in your life, whether you're starting if you're 60, 70, which as you know, a lot of our clients come to our mobility class, or whether you're a 20-year-old, 18-year-old, treat it as a stage, just like you would any job or career. We seem to have this whole plan in process for people to be able to go to university, get their first house, get married, have kids. But where's the process for our health, which I think is the basis for all of that?
All the other stuff.
So treat it the same way you do a business. There's so many people that want to own businesses but don't treat their body like a business and understand the correlation and causation between being fit and healthy, looking after your body, and how successful the rest of your life is.
Yeah.
You look at some of the healthiest people in the world are usually sometimes the most successful. And just because someone has a lot of money, they might look successful on the outside,
yeah,
doesn't mean they're healthy or they're happy or they're fit.
Let me come at this from another direction, and this is a bit of a shameless self-interest, but overtraining, you know, because for me, it's really been a case of, it's never been a case really of not doing enough.
Yeah.
It's always been a case of, or today it's a case of Karen going, look at yourself. Like you just, yeah. How do you know when you're doing too much? I mean, how do you find a balance between peak levels of performance and,
yeah,
I mean, you're never going to be at the peak constantly, but how do you find that line between pushing too hard and not pushing hard enough?
I suppose going back on overtraining, famous lecturer from uni, I remember saying there is no such thing as overtraining.
Right.
You can only under-recover.
Under-recover.
And I think that is the big thing for you. For everyone.
For everyone, yes. And so, okay, all right. We'll talk about that later. I'm fascinated by it because it's like, you can't get too much of a good thing, right?
100%.
Ouch.
Yeah. Okay. Exercise is a stress. It's a beautiful stress.
Yeah, you said that.
And it helps adapt our body. I think that's what people got to be aware of. Yeah. There's other stresses in our life. And if you're constantly hammering yourself, you're not getting anywhere. Time to regress. Don't progress or push further for something. Yeah. Go backwards to then go forward. Cut back. Have a look at what's really useful and then build on that.
But it's counterintuitive though, isn't it? Because in other areas of life, we kind of feel that more
of
X is better.
Well, we're sort of brought up that way, aren't we, in society? You sort of have more, you're more successful, you'll get better. But it's not always the case.
Look, I think you made a great point last week when you said training's a stress.
Yeah.
I was like, no, it's not. Matt's like, I think it is. Because I'm like, no, you just got to ride more and train faster.
Exactly.
So I guess in that, there's a real link, isn't there, between personal psychology and so we've got to tweak that stuff too.
Walks hand in hand.
What do you hope for people? So when people come to see you, Why do you care about people? What do you want to happen for them when they work with you?
I think a bit in the change I see in you, I'll use you as a prime example, which I'm sure you'll be upset about, is consciousness.
Yeah.
I like that word. And there's a great book called Conscious Coaching if anyone wants to read that, if they're really into their consciousness.
The who's that by?
Yeah, Brett Bartholomew.
Okay, that'll be in the show notes,
It's just about people being conscious of their body. Conscious of their development, conscious of their current state of fitness and health, which work hand in hand. Fitness and health aren't separate things. Yeah. And being conscious enough to be able to understand that it's not a linear progression, just the way that it's not a linear sort of degression. We don't suddenly become unfit and unhealthy, and it didn't just happen overnight falling all the time.
Yeah.
So I think my biggest, I suppose, want and desire for any client that comes to me is to be more conscious in the way that they develop themselves with training. And whether they train with me for 3 months or 3 years or 30 years, which hopefully it's not 30 years. I get sick of them. I don't have that many jokes in my pocket. But
you got some good ones.
I have some good ones. Yeah, yeah. Is just to become conscious of the way that they develop themselves.
Break that down for me. What does that mean, consciousness? Like I interviewed a guy last week from New York on mindfulness stuff. And he's, you know, the mindfulness movement is one of the premises is that our culture has become so complex, which you mentioned, that we're so fragmented and overstimulated that we're not quite often in touch with our own physicality.
Yeah.
So is that what does consciousness mean for you, consciousness of the body?
I'll give you two examples. I think one, how many times have you had a trainer, and anyone that's had a trainer on here listening has had a trainer grab their lats or their glutes and say, can you feel that? Can you feel them firing? Your trainer's getting all, can you feel it? Is it firing? Is it activated? And you're sitting there going, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know where my glute is or my lat is.
Yeah, yeah.
People have become so disentuned with their bodies. Yeah. You don't even know where a muscle is. How sad is that when you think about it? The other is go to any commercial gym. And I say this because I think a lot of smaller community gyms and boxes are becoming quite different. They've created a different community and vibe. But you go to any commercial gym and look at the amount of people with headphones on walking on the treadmill for an hour. Zoned out, headphones on. They're not even conscious of the walking they're doing. They leave. Tick off the list, did an hour walk, I'm healthy.
Wow.
And nothing changes. I think you need to take it like anything. If you're not consciously evaluating and reevaluating what you do, you're not going to progress.
I think what working with you has been so interesting is the movement patterns, and like you're like, okay, you're a cyclist. Which is the muscle that's always firing for the cyclist again? Is it
just quad driven? Yeah,
just quads,
it's an anterior. Yeah.
So Matt's got me in there, and I'd never really used bands before. So I get these bands around my legs, and I'm just basically walking with these resistance bands. And then I kind of couldn't walk for 2 days. No, that's not true. But I was like, this muscle activation that I never actually experienced. And
I
think what you've opened my mind up to is just this diverse possibility for many people. The gym is like bench press, treadmill, like you're saying, and a couple of other bits and pieces. And I see that in my wife, like Karen, God bless you if you're listening. That's for her. It's like, I've got to go and walk on the treadmill. I go, well, if you're just going to do that, go and walk on the mountain, right?
100%. And so, I always say that. Yeah, it's better for you.
What do you most enjoy about your work at the moment?
I think the change in people. I like seeing people come in thinking that they don't have the current capability or they'll never be able to do something to suddenly, a few months later, thinking, wow, no back pain.
Yeah.
Wow, I can garden. Wow, I can play with my kids. Whatever they do in the gym, I like to see benefiting them outside of the gym. I don't care if they can deadlift 200 kilos. If they can in the gym, cool, great story. But if that doesn't transfer into actual life, where they can play soccer on a weekend and have memories with their kid and have fun with their family, if they don't feel better at work and more confident out in the real world, I failed them.
What do you find hardest about your work? What's the part of it you don't enjoy?
Ooh, hardest. I think the hardest for me is probably finding the constant energy and the constant, I suppose, motivation for myself for my own training. It's harder. I mean, I pour so much into my clients, and I know a lot of trainers do. It's a very giving job. And it's very rare to find, I suppose, a balance in workplace where you are supported to grow yourself, supported to grow your business, your career, and your own development, which is extremely important. I think it's important for a coach to have a coach or someone to aspire to.
So what are you doing training-wise at the moment?
So I'm just coming off a bit of a – I've done a bit of a blog post about this actually where I haven't trained with a barbell for the first time in 10 years. So for the last month, four weeks, I have not touched a barbell. I made the decision just before May began. I said, I'm not going to touch a barbell. I've worked with a barbell for so long. I'm sort of plateauing a lot. I've tried all different types of training methodologies. I think it's time I just do some down regulation. I do some regression on all of my strength, all my conditioning and everything. I just wind back, reassess where my body's at and what is it that I actually need. I've been doing a lot more mobility. And as a result, I actually feel amazing. I'm sleeping much better.
Really?
I'm eating much better. I'm leaning out again. I don't feel like there's as much stress on my body. As we know, training's a stress. Yeah. And I am a big believer in training to support your life. So I've got to sort of live and be practical in that and be a show for that. So now I'm about to start a cycle on that note. After getting myself ready and rejuvenated and energized, I'm going to do a power building cycle.
Okay.
So sort of a mixture between powerlifting and bodybuilding after using those words. And just a sense to do a bit of hypertrophy work back with a barbell, sort of build up a little bit over winter, some strength.
Yeah.
I like to think I do a big 12-week cycle each year. So
and
do
you blow out? Do you get big?
No, I don't blow out and get really big. I don't really have the frame for it.
Yeah.
I've sort of got a mixture. Like I'm definitely a sort of a mesomorph type of body type, a bit like you, the Irish boxer, Irish bench presser. Yeah, you know how it is. Yeah. So being 6'5", I obviously pack on a lot of muscle.
We'll get some photos on this post, people. You'll see. So what's for the future for you? We've talked about hammering on your craft.
Yeah.
Do you have a sense of, you know, what, I mean, you're still so young, I guess, but legacy, what you want to contribute and build? What's, why are you here? What are you trying to do in this work?
I think my ultimate goal, I think, is to continue with general population clients. I think I'm at that stage now where I want to network with people that I've looked up to. I think I'm at that intellectual age where I can start to network more with people in America, the UK, even Australia, a lot of coaches that I've looked up to for a long time. So I'm starting to reach out to a lot of them, looking for internships and looking for ways to progress myself, career and professionally and personally, I guess, those three sort of ways.
Why do you want that?
I feel like that's the next step. I learn in a practical sense. I'm not really good at sitting down. I get a little bit ADD, sitting down at a textbook and reading those sorts of things. So uni was a bit of a struggle for me at times. But I love the hands-on. I love chutes. I love pracs. But so I want to go and visit these people. Last year, I went on a bit of a tour of America.
Yeah.
And I went to all these gyms and met some of them, lucky enough. Went to CrossFit San Francisco.
The supple leopard.
I met the supple leopard and his beautiful wife. They're both amazing people.
He is supple, right?
He is a very supple leopard. Yeah.
Wow.
Definitely. And just I think I like the energy and I like the fact that people in the gym world that I've looked up to, they're not settling for just mediocrity.
Yeah.
I think that's a really important thing for people to understand is they deserve more than mediocrity. And I think through developing your body, it sounds so cliche and everyone thinks trainers are crazy for thinking this.
Yeah.
But the results show these people that are helping progress their body, it leaches into the rest of your life. And it might take 10 years. It might, but stick with it because it will better you.
So what else do I want to ask you while we've got you here? You carry a lot of natural confidence. Is like, where's that from?
It comes from when I'm passionate about things. In you ask anyone, my girlfriend will be an advocate of this. I'm the shyest person in the room.
Stop it.
Yeah, yeah, actually. You get me out of the gym sense. I won't even be the first person in a cafe to ask for a glass of water.
Really?
Yeah, really.
So are you an introvert?
I am, definitely. Stop. I'm very much in my head, constantly thinking. I'm very introverted.
Yeah, see, I'm the same. People think, you know, because I do all the speaking stuff, people are like, you must be so extroverted. And I'm like, you have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I just need a lot of, you know,
withdrawal. While you're in the corner of the room, yeah. Shrugged up. Yeah, 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 exactly.
So is this a case of the gym is your place where you're comfortable?
And yeah.
Are you playing a role? Or is
I am playing a role. I think definitely. That's what I think I've really found in the gym is it gave me that confidence. A lot of people say the gym and training gave them confidence. It really did for me. It gave me a place in the world.
Yeah.
That's what it did.
I said this to Jason off air, that you've managed to walk the line very effectively between arrogance and confidence, because there's plenty of guys in gyms. When I first met you, and then very quickly I kind of realized, no, you're actually quite comfortable in your own skin and
yeah.
You know, you like what you do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what do you do outside of there?
Outside of the gym?
What do you do? What does this introvert do when he's not, you know, the life of the party in the gym? What do you do?
I like to get out and active in the world as much as I can. I like bushwalks.
Yeah.
I really like mountain bike riding.
Yeah.
Boxing is one of my favorite things to do. But if you took all the exercise and movement out of it, I'm a very big four-wheel drive enthusiast and car enthusiast. Yeah. My dad and I are obsessed with our cars and have been.
Stop it. So what's your dream car?
My dream car is a Porsche GT2 RS.
See, my next door neighbor, and I won't reveal too much, he's got one of those limited ones that came out recently worth 450K.
GT3? Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's in the house next door.
Doesn't happen to be red, is it?
It's black and red, a lot of carbon on it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah.
There's a few of them around this town, actually.
Yeah, he's a property developer, and we just heard this noise one day, and my younger brother's a car nut too, and he ran there, and they went in the garage, and my younger brother's like, you're not serious.
Yeah.
I don't think I could spend that much on a car.
No, but I could. If I had.
I never got the car. I'm a motorbike guy. I'm just like, cars, I don't know. See, I'm a huge fan of 1981 TE Holden Geminis.
Oh, yeah, right. The Bogan-mobile.
Well, see, it was. You know, you needed a rat's tail to drive one.
You
but
did.
That's the car I had when I was dating Karen.
Okay.
And the cool thing about this was that the steering wheel actually wasn't bolted on for some reason. So you could drive and take the steering wheel off.
Security.
So one day, Karen's little sister was in the car with me, and I was doing about 110Ks an hour down the highway.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I just took the steering wheel off and handed it to her. She lost her mind. So,
but you're married now.
I'm married now. So you love your cars.
I do love my cars, yeah.
I love your bushwalking. What else do you enjoy doing at this stage of life?
This stage of life is just learning. I really do enjoy reading.
Yeah.
And I consciously sort of try and listen to as many podcasts as I can a week.
Yeah.
I have a bit of a – each week I have a list, like a daily list and a weekly list of things that I have to tick off that just help my personal development. I think that's the biggest thing for me. Anything that's not bettering me, then it's a waste of time.
Sure. Let's – I want to ask you two things to finish. I'm big on purpose with people. If I'm coaching and stuff, it's all around purpose. And if you can help people really get clear on the why they're here.
Yeah, yeah.
Purpose will drive strategy, and then strategy will drive time management.
Yep.
So – I realized a few years ago really what my purpose is. Are you connected to that for yourself yet? Like, are you able to articulate what you think your purpose is, why you're here?
I think I'm getting there. Yeah.
What would you say? Give us some – what's your intuition around what you're trying to do?
I think my intuition is that I will always be around people.
Yeah.
I'll always be teaching people and learning from people and using human movement as the basis for that learning.
Yeah.
Where that goes in the next 10 years, I can see the 5-year plan.
Yeah.
The 10-year plan, who knows? I sort of, again, using the word organically, I like to let it happen organically, and I will just let the world sort of lead me as I go.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I find that fascinating that, because you're a mix. Like, from the little I know, the time I've spent with you, like, you're quite very focused and very clear, but you're simultaneously like, I'll just let this thing.
Yeah. Oh, I can be extremely laid back. I think you need to be. You've got to be driven. But again, stresses, like you've got to just sort of let it happen sometimes. If you stress about it, it's just going to hurt you. Yeah.
I haven't been too good at that part of life. The only time I nailed that, I did nail this once, and I nailed it when it mattered.
Yep.
Because my wife, who I adore, refused to go out with me for 3 years.
Oh, wow. Turned you down. How could you turn down the Irish bench presser?
I was in prison. No, I wasn't. So 3 years, totally refused to even go on a date with me, right?
Yep.
She was very confident, not arrogant, but she was very confident she was, and she didn't want to just date anybody. So 3 years. We were very good friends.
Chased her for 3 years.
Chased her for 3 years. Ooh. And I did, and there was this moment, she was going overseas.
Yeah.
And this was back in the day, and people didn't travel as much, and it was a big thing, and she was going to America for 3 months. And I went round to her house to say goodbye, and I was smitten with Karen, had been for years. But I finally accepted it was never going to happen. So I went round there this night. She lived in Canberra here, and I went round and I said, look, I just came to say I wish you all the best for this trip, and I hope you have a great time. And I said, look, Karen, I finally accepted that we're just never going to be together, and, you know, I just want to wish you all the best. And she stopped, and she goes, I'll walk you outside. I had a cool motorbike. Then I walk out to the bike, and she says, I've changed my mind. I really think we should start going out when I get back. And I'm like, what? So my point was that it was at that moment of finally letting go of what I chased for so long. Oh, very hard to do though. Very hard to do. The other practical stuff I want to ask you was, so I want to add value to the people listening. There's a relatively small majority of people going, yeah, this is a good podcast. This is interesting, but I'm super fit and I've got this covered.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about 3% of the listeners. Everybody else listening who's stuck at some point mm-hmm. and who wants to make a change in their body,
yeah,
help them understand, give them some value here. How can they start this process to get that momentum? How can they begin off the back of what you're saying to get back into awareness of their body and create some change? What can they do?
The best thing to do is to find a coach, a good coach.
Yep.
And I don't mean that from someone coming from the industry to get a bit of revenue happening for the industry that I'm in, but actually go and find someone. Yep. Just the same way you go and see a doctor, you go and see a mechanic for your car. It's a professional service, and you're going to need someone to sort of lay out that plan for you, but make sure you have rapport with them.
Well, yeah, what do they look for? What are they?
I think look for a coach that doesn't have a bum bag, a backwards hat, and a singlet. No, a fake tan doesn't go astray.
Good. So good.
I think when looking for a coach, go and look in places that aren't in your direct area of gym, or things, places that you don't always hear on the constant radio, television, that aren't always blaring in your face.
Yeah.
It's usually when you're looking in the wrong direction that you'll find something.
Okay.
So go to your local CrossFit boxes. Mm-hmm. Go to your smaller boutique-y type of personal training facilities.
Why?
Because I think those people are genuinely in it for the right reasons. Yeah. And that's what you want, is someone who's genuinely there to help you,
as
not just to turn
some
it over.
Mega gym with...
Look, personal training is the new hairdressing cafes, and not to put any of these industries down, but there's just saturated with people flowing through. And I've seen it myself, being in the industry now for over 10 years, hundreds of PTs have outlasted. People that come in for 6 months, a year, 2 years, and then leave because it's too hard. If you're not genuinely in it for the right reasons, you're not going to last, really, are you? So find someone that's got at least 5 years plus experience under their belt, that has a bit of a story to tell you, and that you find a little bit of a connection with. And again, trust your intuition. If you have one or two sessions, you don't enjoy it, go somewhere else and try something else and continue to try.
What do you think that, you know, in that context, what do you think that you bring specifically as a trainer that people, that is worth emulating? What is it that you do, being, you know, not, you know, this is not arrogance, but what do you think you do really well that people should be looking for in a trainer or a coach?
Someone who's listening.
Yeah.
And someone who's genuinely observing what's going on, like watches you, like they're conscious of what's going on.
Yeah.
Doesn't have their head up in the clouds thinking, what's for lunch today? Do I have my protein balls or what's going on?
Yeah.
Look for a coach that's actually actively looking at the way you walk in the room, walk out of the room, and can even say, yeah, I know you've got back pain. I can see that tilt to your side.
Yeah, I think that's where you and I started, wasn't it? Because, I mean, people might know, some people who follow me for a while, I had a really bad back injury, blew discs and didn't walk for a couple of months, and I kind of showed you some MRIs, but you were more like, I think from memory, you were like, yeah, I've been just looking.
Watching you train. Yeah, I was just watching you train.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think someone who is watching, it's pretty easy to work out the body from there. Like, it's not really rocket science. There is a lot more to it on a cellular level, and it's constantly changing. But anyone worth their weight as a PT would be able to look at someone and go, yep, I can see why you're in pain.
So they look for a smaller boutique operation. They look for someone that's listening, someone that's been in the industry for a while. At the level of mindset, there are so many people going to be listening to this that are like, oh, yeah, this is great. It's really interesting. Tomorrow morning they wake up at 6 and it's cold, or like, how do they make that mindset shift? You alluded to it before, is that they just become conscious of where they're actually at. They tell themselves the truth.
Yeah. Be truthful to yourself. It's really hard to swallow that truth. Lay in bed, close your eyes and think about the next 5 years if you don't change anything. How do you look? How do you feel?
That's a good point. There's a great story from Tony Robbins. It's hilarious, where he said, you know, he was doing one of his events, and he was talking about health and fitness and all this stuff, and everyone's getting really excited. And he said this lady came up to him in the break, and she was worth a huge amount of money. She was quite well known and immensely wealthy. And she came up to him and she said, you know, I listened to everything you said and I've been so inspired. I've written this plan and I want to show you this plan. And it's like it had all this stuff, you know, that she was going to do and all these action steps. And he said, he goes, I looked at her and I said, ma'am, I don't mean to be rude, but you don't need any of that. You just need a very big person behind you yelling, run! it's just like sometimes we can overcomplicate it and sometimes 100%. We just need to get started.
Yeah. Keep it simple. Keep it simple.
Okay. So you've got – just let's finish up with something simple. If you had a large group of people in a room and you could tell them a few things that you're most passionate about with this work, the stuff that really you want people to know, the essence of what you're trying to communicate, what would you tell people that matters, that's important in this whole thing we're discussing?
That's a big one. I think what I'd tell a group of people is that they need to be more aware that their development is in their hands. The tools are out there. They've got to seek them. There's a little bit of work involved and time. I think one of my early mentors, Dave Nixon, said to me, time's going to pass, mate. May as well do something constructive in it. And I think that's what it's about, is getting people to understand that time is going to pass. Keep it simple and be constructive during that time, because otherwise it's just going to go like that.
Yeah.
And there goes your health and fitness. There goes your life, essentially.
You know, I was listening to I've got an app on my phone, a mindfulness thing from a company called Calm. If people want to check that app out, it's very, very good. And they have these masterclasses on it on all sorts of different health and fitness, mental health stuff.
Yeah.
They were talking the other day just around – they were talking about depression. They had this neuroscientist talking about what a huge issue it is and what drives it.
Yep.
They had 6 steps, but one of the crucial ones, the biggest one for him, was around movement.
Yeah.
It was literally around – that a lot of people, I mean, I'm no mental health professional and, you know, obviously people need to get professional advice, but often it's this sedentary lifestyle where we're breathing a certain way and we're slumped over and just literally getting moving can have a huge impact on that stuff.
Breathing does, definitely. People need to learn how to breathe. It's probably the most poorly done function of any human is breathing. And we've done a bit on it, haven't we? Breathing and bracing, creating intra-abdominal pressure and just learning to take oxygen in.
And the times we've done it, like you're explaining it to me and I'm going, I'm trying to think, I can't. It's like I don't quite have, it's like I haven't had the experience in thinking about how to breathe properly.
Yeah, and we're never taught how to. Yeah. Just the same, we've never really been taught how to run. It's just expected. So why be expected to know these things?
So, my friend, I'm going to put a bunch of stuff in the show notes, but where are you publishing? What are you writing and stuff? Where can people find you? I'll put links in, but where can we find you?
I have, apart from obviously Evo Health Club's page on Instagram, I have my own personal page, which isn't any sort of business stuff, but it's just about movement. It's about tips. It's about mindset. And that's just Mr_HumanMovement.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll put that in the show notes. I was going to say, anybody listening to this in the hometown here in Canberra, please check out Evo Health. Get in touch with Matt.
Definitely.
I'm really a big fan of what you've done.
Thank you.
I said to Karen the other day, I said, Kaz, you know, I haven't had pain on that area now since I started working with
Matt. That's what it's about.
So it's either that or the huge amount of, you know, opium I'm using behind the scenes. No, it's not true.
But the Matt, red wine.
You've been a huge help to me personally.
I'm glad. Good to hear.
I think you're doing a great job there. You're one of the good guys. You're a very positive, passionate, intelligent person making a difference in people's lives.
Thank you.
In your corner of the world. So thank you for what you're doing. I'm going to point people to your stuff in the show notes. Everything we've talked about will be in the show notes. And also just want to encourage people, just listen to what we've said, listen to what Matt shared with us. And if you're overweight or you've got injuries, that doesn't have to be the end of the story, right?
Yeah.
There's really another chapter to be written if you start putting some of this stuff 100%, in
process. Yeah, your development's in your hands, yeah.
Get conscious, listen to this podcast again, share it with people, get in touch with Matt, you know, as a trainer, as a coach, as a consultant on your health and fitness. It'd be a great asset to anybody. So, mate, thanks for coming in.
Thank you. It's been great.
Joining the weekly podcast, and I'm hopefully going to be in the gym again tomorrow.
Beautiful.
Awesome.
We'll see you there.
Thanks, buddy.
No worries. Thanks.
Hey guys, there you go. How good was that, huh? I just really enjoyed that. I felt it was a privilege to hear Matt's story, especially early in that podcast, and to see how far he's come. And I think I got a lot out of that. I hope that you did too. Just these simple ideas that if you're feeling stuck, get yourself a coach, get underway. None of us should really feel that we don't have the capacity to really get the most out of our bodies. I mean, life is relatively short. If you're going to be here, let's get the most we can out of our health and fitness. So I really hope that that was a real help to you. Please share it with people. Please make sure you've subscribed. Matt's links will be in the show notes. So wherever you're, if you're seeing this on my website or wherever else, Apple Podcasts, Android, there'll be links to all these feeds and little bits and pieces that we've talked about. Last thing from me, if you're interested in personal coaching, I take a very small number of people. If you're interested in mindset coaching, goal setting, shifting your current level of performance in life and business to a new level, I take a very small number of people. And if you want to work with me personally, please reach out through wherever you're hearing this and we can talk about how I could bring you some value as your personal coach. Often we get stuck and we just need somebody, as Matt said, he's an expert in human movement and health and well-being. I could be a real help to you perhaps in the area of mindset and goal setting and breaking through whatever's significant to you. So please reach out if you'd like to do some coaching with me personally. But for now, that's it. Make sure you subscribe because we're going to have another great interview next week. I think we've got Jessica Baum coming up from Palm Beach in the United States. She's going to have some great stuff for us. But today, I hope you enjoyed that great interview with Maddie Rogers. I'm Jonathan Doyle. Going to have another podcast for you next week.